We all sense the world in different ways. Some of us have more heightened sensory experiences than others. My next guest's approach to sensing and moving through the world is particularly striking. Daniel Kish has been totally blind since he was 13 months old. His eyes happened to be removed because of an aggressive cancer, retinoblastoma. Well, some 45 years later, he's the president of World Access for the Blind, a not-for-profit charity based in California. And despite what you may assume about blindness, this is a man who can ride a bike and take a hike. He does this by using sound to sense where he's going, effectively in real time. It's called echolocation. It's what bats use to fly fast through the forest. And as a world leader in the technique, he's now training and advocating for others. Daniel's in Australia to work with Guide Dogs New South Wales and ACT in an effort to promote independence and well-being of other blind people and to really reconfigure our assumptions about what the experience is to be blind and to navigate through the world. And Daniel's just hastily popped into the studio. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
It's good to have you in Australia. Describe what it is that you do, how you use sound to sense and move through the world. You described it, I think, quite evocatively as an echo language to converse with the environment.
Well, you've read up on me.
Of course.
Yes, it is something of a language. So essentially, you're using an active signal. We tend to use tongue clicks. And basically, what I tell students is that with those signals, scientists call them calls, sonar calls, you're essentially asking two questions of the environment. You're asking, what are you and where are you? And what I tell people is that the more clearly they can ask these questions, the more clearly will the environment answer with information about itself. And so by making these calls into the environment strategically, and I'll also say discreetly, because the call needn't be any louder than a situation requires.
So, and this is important for people who are you teaching, because there's a self-consciousness here, isn't
exactly.
there, clicking your way through the world.
Correct. So you can click very quietly in environments that are quiet or for targets that are close by, or the click can be much louder in the case of noisy environments or for targets that are much further away. It takes quite a call to reach a target that might be several hundred meters away. And by using these calls, we can gather information from surfaces throughout the world around us and extract images from that information.
What sorts of images? How fine-grained can you go? I gather you can sense quite specific textures and surfaces and the dimensionality of a surface as well.
Well, when a sound wave goes out, it essentially goes out in a physical form. It's measurable. It's an actual physical shape, if you will. And when it encounters surfaces in the environment, it returns with a kind of impression of the surface that it encountered. Now, the impressions are not as fine-grained as impressions made from light because of the difference in the size of sound waves versus light waves. But you'd get an impression, a pixelated impression, if you will, if you would imagine the pixels being about the size of a cricket ball. Okay, so if you filled the world with cricket balls, and then you somehow extracted the mold made from all these cricket balls, that would essentially be
something... The texture you sense.
Yes, that would be about the resolution of the texture.
So we're in a studio. It's an acoustically compromised environment, I know, but is it possible to demonstrate how you would use echolocation to navigate this space and get a sense of the objects in it?
Well, I mean, I have headphones on at the moment.
And you could take them off if you like.
Okay. So, I certainly get back to the door. That'd be easy enough. It's a basically square room, without a whole lot in it. Actually, so there's not really a whole lot, and it's not. It's a little more rectangular than square, but it's a room about the size, a little larger than an average bedroom. So, I mean, there's not much in here, but if I were in a park, say, I could move about the park on my own. I wouldn't need any supervision to do anything like that. And I frequently move throughout the world, different countries and so on.
So you can move quite fluidly through a city that you haven't encountered before.
It doesn't matter what the environment is. I can move fluidly through any environment and either avoid surfaces or interact with surfaces. I get information about what surfaces are. So, for example, just this morning, I participated in a news program where I could show where the trees were. I could hold my hands out, for example, to the exact size of a trunk, and I could move my hands around the trunk without actually touching it. I discovered that there was a pavilion in the park. I could gauge the size of trees. And these are the kinds of things that we teach people to be able to do.
Well, the whole posture of a person changes, don't they? You use a stick while you're doing this,
yes.
But there's a whole shift in posture and presence of a blind person who's using this technique, it strikes me.
Yeah, they seem to become quite poised, and there is something that we might call an echo posture. The head comes up, the posture becomes more erect, and the person gives every appearance of being more poised and vigilant because, in fact, they are. And a big part of what we teach is precision of movement and grace of movement. So the ability to not just know that there's something over there, but to know what it is, where it is, to the extent that we could actually reach over and touch it or find it or avoid it or pass through it or whatever.
Grace is important here. This is a kind of a political act for you as much as a personal one, isn't it? This sort of graceful way of navigating and moving through the world and helping other people who are fully blind do that as well.
Well, I think that it helps not only to make a positive impression to others, but to share with those around you a positive impression of oneself. And I think that that is what really contributes to one's freedom, not only one's freedom to interact with the world on one's own terms, with the physical world, but also with the social world.
It makes me wonder why we don't see more people using this, and certainly World Access for the Blind, the organisation that you head up, is very much focused on sharing these skills as widely as you can. You've trained in multiple countries now, many people, but what prompted you in your life to start learning this skill? Did it start as a child? Was it a kind of self-experimentation, or was it more sort of organized than that?
It's really pre-memory for the most part. I think it has a lot to do, I think it has everything to do really with my parents and how I was raised. So I was raised to be free. I was not raised with restrictions. I was not raised with kind of this blind smoke screen around me.
Or burden,
yes. So I just interacted with the world quite normally as a child and had to develop a kind of equalizer, if you will. But that happened very, very early on. So I don't really recall the process. I've had to, in developing the instructional methodologies that I have, I've
reverse engineer it.
Exactly. I've had to reverse engineer my own brain to work out how this might be developed with other people.
Well, so actually, before we come to how you train others, it really never ceases to amaze us, doesn't it, how the brain is such an adaptive organ. And I guess we have this really large sensory cortex in our brains dedicated to vision because we are such visual beings. But what's happening neurologically with you? Does that kind of get recolonized with this auditory skill?
Well, I've actually been brain scanned.
Ah.
And the results are that, somewhat surprisingly, my visual cortex looks quite healthy under the scanner. So if we play echo images at me or others, I've had colleagues go into the scanner as well, and they are experienced echolocators, when they are echolocating in the scanner, it is the visual cortex that is activated. And it is activated, not only is it activated, but it's activated in a manner that is analogous to the visual cortex in a sighted person.
So hence your wonderful expression that you are literally seeing with sound.
Well, we now know it's true.
Very interesting, because I wondered about that. Why reappropriate the word see? You're not seeing, you're hearing, and why not stake a claim on that?
As far as the brain is concerned, we're actually seeing. And then the approach that we take in terms of instruction is to activate the imaging system to process information that comes into the brain, tactile and haptic, as well as auditory, and construct what we'd call composite images, or images that are integrated of information, to form a real-time, dynamic, interactive picture of the environment.
It really intrigues me what that internal feeling must be like as you're training people. And certainly, Daniel, you've trained kids to play basketball who are fully blind, ride skateboards. That must be incredibly exciting for them.
Just the process of activating the brain in a global way. When we're developing perception, perception is quite globally extant throughout the brain. So as perceptual development is happening, the brain is being stimulated, activated, if you will, in a global sense. And that activation process is really quite stimulating to students.
How hard is it to teach this technique and learn it?
It seems to be quite simple. I believe that early man must have echolocated, because it's just not that difficult to teach. So usually we can make a very decisive difference for a student in a matter of, say, 2 or 3 days. We can go in, we can work with a family, and really excite quite a change in that individual's relationship with the environment in relatively short order.
Fantastic. Look, wow, what a technique. And an interesting exercise for us all to have a practice with our eyes shut. I noticed you did that on a TED video. Daniel Kish, thanks so much for coming into the studio, and good luck with your workshops here with the Guide Dogs Association and some of your compatriots.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Daniel Kish, echolocation trainer, president of World Access for the Blind. Their website is well worth a look, and we'll link to it from the Radio National Life Matters webpage, abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters. Coming up, your feedback.